So, for this evening's talk, after the talk I have to again rush off because I'm still teaching a 9-day retreat over at Jhana Grove. But because I don't come here that often these days because I get hijacked, kidnapped to other countries, so it's nice to be able to, whatever I can, to come and give a talk here. So I'm here for the Friday night, but again, tomorrow and the next day, Ajahn Bhumale is going to be taking over. And one of the reasons for coming here is just to check in with everybody and to give a bit of a boost. And especially that as I do travel overseas, I do learn a lot. It's not just teaching. Whenever you go, you learn from the experience of your life and how that you can apply these Buddhist principles in daily life, and also check out just how these principles, the ancient principles, can be meaningful in our modern world. And one of the places where I went to was going over to UK, to my old university, because I got an invitation to participate in a debate with Russell Brand. Unfortunately, Russell never turned up. I did. But nevertheless, that's life, that you always have lots of unexpected things, but almost like that doesn't really stop you enjoying your life and getting meaning out of your life. There's so many times in life, whatever we plan must always be tentative. In other words, you sometimes if you expect something to happen and it doesn't, people get so frustrated and angry because they don't understand just what life is. As I was mentioning, I think, this morning, to the retreatants over in Jhana Grove, that when a Singapore gentleman, he came up to me many years ago, and he said, I hear that you're a very wise monk, so can you teach me what Buddhism is? I've only got about a minute, because I've got to go to work. So you know that sometimes when people just want really deep teachings, and they've only got a minute, instead of saying that's impossible, I always like to challenging myself and just finding sort of see what you can do in such a short time. And what I came up with, I often repeat to people. If I just stuffed it and failed and got something stupid, of course I wouldn't remember it, wouldn't repeat it. What I said is like the suffering is asking from life what it can't give you. It's asking from life something which you cannot have. That's called suffering. So learning the limitations of life for yourself, learn the limitations that, make some plans, but it doesn't work out quite as you expected. So you've got to sort of let go and change and just adapt as things happen. And I always remember this little anecdote that when I was going to Indonesia for one of the first times, and I had my ticket on Garuda, and I went to the airport, and as I turned up in the airport, there was a big sign saying, flight cancelled. Not delayed, but totally cancelled. It never existed anymore. And I had all these people expecting me to turn up and give a big talk. I had just no way of actually at the time, because I don't have any money, don't have a mobile phone, don't have a personal credit card, so I was stuck at the airport with nowhere to go, nowhere to fly, nowhere to get back to this place. And I saw many people getting really angry. But then, why get angry? They were banging the table. This poor person on the Garuda help counter, information counter. You've got to get me the flight, you've got to get me the flight. You know what I saw happen? All they got was very sore hands. The flight never turned up. They were just hurting themselves even more. And as for me, that I asked very calmly, somebody gave me a little phone which I could actually call someone from here to pick me up and take me back here. And I rang the people inviting me. And they said, people will be very disappointed that you can't come. I said, but it's not my fault, and don't blame the airline. It's not their fault, it's Garuda, it's a bird. And that was the time they had bird flu in Indonesia. So I said, that flight had to be cancelled because your aircraft got bird flu. So just something a little bit funny like that, and tell people that this is uncertainty. You have to live within the confines, restraints, the truth of what life can give you and what it can't. Sometimes people don't turn up. Sometimes it can't happen. So this is, you know, our life. So we don't get angry at such things. Why do you get angry at things which you can't do anything about? All you get is just a sore hand banging the table. And it doesn't make the flight come any earlier. So it doesn't make the flight come at all. So you see, a lot of people, they get frustrated and they sort of get sort of really upset and they stress themselves out simply because they don't know a basic teaching of life, that you can't always expect to get things coming on time, things coming your way. Always your expectations, when you ask from life something it can't give you, that's called suffering. So the solution? Understand what life can give you. Understand just, you know, that things go wrong, things don't work the way you want them to, people are late. Understand what life can give you, work within those parameters, and then you're happy. You're at peace. So, in other words, less than your wanting and your craving and expectations. So one of the little tricks which we learn is actually learn how to not raise your expectations, but to lower them. Lower your expectations and you have a far happier life. So lower your expectations of your husband. You should have learned by now. Lower your expectations of your kids. Your poor kids just finishing their year-end exams. I know it's the year-end exams now, because people actually come to the temple for blessings. I know the exams are over, but you haven't got the results yet. So you come up and say, Ajahn Brahma, I don't think I've done very well. Chant, 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 chant. I don't know if that works, but, you know, we've got nothing to lose as a monk. You know, if it doesn't work, they leave you alone. If it does work, they give you an extra donation. Either ways, I don't lose anything. But whatever, you know, it's just a nice piece of raising up people, encouraging them, motivating them, just giving a boost of confidence, if nothing else. So, you know, you don't ask from this world something it can't give you. In other words, you lower expectations to the truth of this life, what it can give you. And sometimes you can't always, when people say they're going to be there, sometimes they're not. So you don't get upset and embarrassed or angry all that way, and you know, it wasn't really going to happen. So you make the most of it. So part of what I learned there, they were having this little debate, and just why they had a debate. It was, you know, about the lack of faith or lack of religiosity, the lack of confidence which we have in religious traditions these days. And every time I seem to look at a newspaper, there's always some other scandal, whether it's sexual abuse or domestic abuse, you know, in people who are leaders in our communities, whether it's in religion or in movies or whatever. And sometimes that we've lost a lot of faith in authorities. People we, you know, really want to look up to, sometimes we don't trust anymore. And so it's that lack of confidence and faith in people who used to be pillars of society. But still, people want a spirituality. Now, they still want, you know, this thing which you can have confidence and faith in, this truth, this forgiveness, this kindness. Now, what is that, the essence of spirituality? And why do we actually, we call it spirituality, it's just changing the name. We don't call it religion anymore. Call it spirituality. Because that means you let go of all the baggage of beliefs in things which are almost impossible to believe in, and instead just go to something which you can experience for yourself. Now, this is the joy of when you see someone do a really beautiful act of kindness, or forgiveness, or generosity. And generosity not by just giving donations, but giving a little bit of space to somebody. You know, just like here, just our little Buddhist society. Yeah, sometimes people make mistakes. They snore during the meditation. And if they do, the door of our heart is open to you. Because I still recall many years ago one of these classic examples. There was a lady who just over the corner over there, that she laid out during the meditation, pointing her feet towards the Buddha, and fell fast asleep. Now, according to the traditions, number one, you're not supposed to point your feet to the Buddha. That's supposed to be disrespectful. And you're not supposed to lay down while other people are sitting. And also, you're not supposed to fall asleep and start snoring when other people are trying to meditate. And so a couple of people woke her up and told her off. And so I had to take those two people aside afterwards and say, don't ever do that again. That poor lady, because the truth of the matter was, she talked to me beforehand that she was suffering quite horrendous domestic abuse. She hadn't slept for days. She was terrified. And she came here because it was a peaceful place. And it was the first place she experienced in days where she felt safe. You know, just the atmosphere of the place was reassuring, kind, soft. And so, feeling safe, she lay down and fell fast asleep. And I said, what a wonderful gift that was, that we could have given her just to take half an hour of sleeping here. Forget about, you know, the snoring, just because she needed to sleep. Forget about pointing the feet at the Buddha. You know, she's not doing that out of disrespect. She just needed a place of safety where she could catch up on a bit of sleep. And we could offer that to her. What a wonderful gift that was. And it was ideas like that show the whole purpose, the meaning behind what we call spirituality, the kindness, the ability just to open up and just allow things which may be a little bit against the rules, but, you know, what are the rules there for anyway? What's the purpose, of what does that Buddha behind me stand for? You know, I often say this, I have to keep repeating it, because sometimes people forget what we do all these rituals and rites and ceremonies for. You know, we have like the bowing ceremony. And I always have to repeat this, because sometimes people don't know, what do we bow for? You know, is that a religious rite or whatever? It could be a religious rite if you don't understand what you're doing it for. But the meaning behind it, you know, is what I do when I bow. I bow to what the Buddha represents for me. And to me, I always bow. The first bow is always for virtue, for goodness. Now, the ethics. And because when you're a good person, you're a kind person, you know, you're a trustworthy person, it makes life so peaceful and so safe. It's one of the reasons that woman could fall asleep, because she felt that no one was going to attack her, no one was going to steal her bags. This was, you know, an ethical place where you can trust people. And it made life so much easier. You know, when you don't have to lock your doors, you don't have to worry, if I fall asleep, what will happen? When people are trusted, they're good, ethics. And I always remember just this, when one of my oldest friends, because we were at the Boy Scouts, before that, the Cubs together. And they went to school together. And he's still always keep in touch. And he came to visit me in Thailand many, many years ago. And he became like a school teacher, and I was a monk. And he came to visit me in Thailand, and when he arrived there, it was amazing to actually to find me all that way. And so I settled him into his room, and I said, one of the wonderful things to experience in those days in northeast Thailand was the alms round in the morning. Because we get up really early at dawn, and just as it gets light, the monks take their bowl and they walk silently, mindfully, through the village. And these really poor people, they get up early to put some rice in the monk's bowl. And if you don't go there, they sort of come and ask you, where have you been? We want you to come here. Seeing peaceful, calm people first thing in the morning, it starts our day. And we'd really miss it if you never came. So it was just the sight of peaceful people, calm, quiet people, just walking through the village, reminding them of their spirituality. And they'd come in there, and quietly they put a bit of rice in the bowl, and then we come back to the monastery afterwards for our meal. And you know that, I said, this is one of the best times of the morning. It's cool, the light is perfect. You know, you must come. And he said, listen, Ajahn Brahm, I'm so tired, I get so stressed at work, there's no way I can wake up at that time of the morning. And I said, you don't have to worry at all, I'll come to your room and I'll knock on the door 15 minutes before we go, so you can get time to get ready. He said, okay. And that was the agreement, and I obviously did that. And as we were walking back, he thanked me because it was a wonderful time of the day. And it was really spiritual, peaceful, kind, people looking after one another. And he, on the way back, he told me, thank you for waking me up so that I can join in this little wonderful ceremony. But he said, it was really weird. When I went to sleep that night, he said, I knew that you'll be there in the morning to wake me up. It was such a weird experience that I could trust you. Because in London, where he lived, he said, there's so many times people promise they'll do something and they never turn up. Or they promise something and they give me something else. That you can't trust people in the outside world, but here I could trust you 100%. And that was such a unique experience. When people say to you they're going to do something for you, or they're going to turn up, they're going to give you a call, can you trust them that much? It's rotten, isn't it? It's terrible. It causes so much more business, so much more work, so much more anxiety when you don't have that beautiful ethics. Living in a monastery, living with other Buddhists is such a brilliant privilege, you know, because these are honest, trustworthy people, kind people. And just having that much of trust makes it just a privilege to live with such other spiritual people. Ethics solves so many problems of stress. I don't have to watch my back. I know there is one person, they told me that I signed many t-shirts and jackets, and somebody gave me a jacket in Indonesia. Can you sign it? I said, okay, what should I say? Ajahn Brahm's got your back. Because I signed at the back of her jacket. And she said, that's so wonderful that, you know, she wears that jhana grove and she feels safe. It's just a little way of saying that you don't need to fear anything, you don't need to be worried about what other people are saying or doing right, because you can trust people. So ethics, virtue, is something which, you know, I've practiced in my life and I value so highly. You don't need to lie. You don't need to deceive people. You can trust people. And that's such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful part of human life, which I take for granted in my life, but other people, they find it so rare. So that's why I worship, I bow to virtue, because I really see its importance. But I also, you know, bow the second time to peace, because peace, it comes from virtue. You can relax. You don't need to argue with one another. You don't need to shout at one another. You don't need to fight one another to get your own way. Well, you can find some peace in this world. And of course you find that peace by lowering your expectations of what life is, not fighting, making peace, being kind, being gentle with yourself, with others. By saying not low, by lowering your expectations, you always see that what people think is perfection is actually just not attainable. And little mistakes which you make give you this beautiful humanity, lovability. Don't know how many Thai people are here today, but so often that, you know, when I came back from Thailand, you know, 33 years ago, my Thai was fluent. Because you don't practice it so much here, that sometimes, you know, the Thai or the Laotian gets a bit strange. I remember once there was, after being here for about 10 years, there was a whole group of Thai people came from Bangkok, and they wanted me to give them a teaching in Thai. So I did. I gave them as best I could, a little Dharma discourse for 50 minutes in Thai. And they said afterwards, that was amazing, that was wonderful. That's the first time we've heard a monk give a talk in Sanskrit. Actually in Pali. It was in Pali, it was Thai. Oh, we didn't understand it, we thought it was in Pali. So I thought I'd better not do that again. So anyway, the next time I said, oh, I better, you know, brush up my Thai, do some classes. And the Thai people said, no, don't. So why, don't you want me to speak perfect Thai? I said, well, it's good enough, we understand what you mean. But they said, it's like cute when you make mistakes. It's fun when you pronounce the words wrong. And they said, don't be perfect. Lower your expectations because we love you as you are. And I really took that on board. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to say the right things in the right way. Because that's not the world. That's not the way it is. Now everything, you know, you see weeds growing in the grass. You see trees bending over. You see, oh, the beautiful clouds or the dust in the horizon of the evening. And those little imperfections on the horizon at night time. That is what causes the beautiful golds and reds and crimsons to spread across the horizon. Without that dust or those few clouds, it would not be a beautiful sunset. So these days that you always, you celebrate and respect imperfections. I don't look at them as imperfections anymore. That's beauty. That's character. That's just beautiful the way this world is. You make peace with them. Instead of always trying to fix them. You know, we try and fix all these problems, and what do? We just get stressed out, and the problems are still there the next day. We try and make them a little bit better, but you know, sometimes I wonder, just all that effort to fix up the problems of life, is that making more problems? So, I make peace with things, and I love when we just respect people for who they are. We don't try and change them. We just learn how to embrace them instead of challenging them, fighting them, getting rid of them. This is the story which I, again, I'm just repeating some of the things I said this morning because they're fresh in my mind. You know, when I first became a Buddhist, I never knew many other Buddhists at all. And then eventually when I went to college, I did find some other Buddhists, but most of my friends were either atheists, scientists. There's a couple of Christians, and because there were people who were religious Christians, then, you know, we used to hang out together and have these amazing discussions. You know, friendly discussions, respectful discussions. But I always remember this Christian fellow which I knew, a very good friend, And he said, oh, he just volunteered to do some social work. I said, what are you doing? And there was not far from the university, it was Fulbourn Hospital. And there were people who, you know, had, you know, some disabilities who went there, who were institutionalized in there in those days. And they were volunteering to do some work, volunteer work. This was in the 60s, 70s, with people with Down syndrome. And my thought was, I'm so busy, but if the Christians could do it, I'd better do it as well. It was pride. It was conceit. It was just, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. That's all it was. So they have to do it, I have to do it. I wish I hadn't mentioned that. So I volunteered to go along as well. And what happened was, thank you for getting me to go there, because I went there continuously for 2 years. And it was not service at all. I went there because I enjoyed it. I looked forward to those Thursday afternoons. I think it was Thursday afternoons. Because I valued just being taught and inspired by people who were locked away by society, because they weren't appreciated. They couldn't see this incredible, and I say incredible, incredible sensitivity. And I told the story that, you know, that this is one which really stands out to me. The night before I broke up with my girlfriend, I wasn't born a monk. And I went there on a Thursday afternoon. And as I was walking towards this unit, one of the men who was Down syndrome came running towards me. And they just threw their arms around me and gave me this really big hug. What are you doing that for? I said, you're upset, aren't you? They saw it straight away. Like, how on earth did you know that? And they were just so emotionally sensitive. They could look at you and know that, you know, you were sad, you were upset, you were angry, or you're disappointed. And I was just so amazed. They weren't intellectually able to go to a university, but emotionally, before anyone mentioned the word emotional intelligence, those were people with huge amounts of emotional intelligence. Yes, they hadn't developed another part of their character or their mind, but emotional intelligence was there in just so huge quantities. And I experienced that for myself, and so I realized there's more to life than just studying. Feeling. And just peace is an emotion, it's a feeling. You can't write it down in a book what peace is or analyze it, but my goodness, you can know it. And when you feel peace, you really feel peace inside. It's just so amazing, wonderful. And that's why with spirituality, that I don't know just how you can write poems about peace. There are some people who are poets and they can capture something so easily. But for me, it's just all those little anecdotes and stories of finding peace in some of the most amazing places. And one story which comes up is the story of the building surveyor in Serpentine Gerardo many years ago. You know, we had to sort of put all our plans and schemes up for assessment in the local council. And this particular building surveyor, I never really knew. I just had in the plans and they'd come back later on. But this gentleman, he came to see me in Bodhinyana just after lunch one day. And he came up and I didn't know who he was. He said, I'm your local building surveyor. I've done many of your plans. And I said, well, what are you doing here? And he said, I've just come to say thank you. Thank you for giving you extra work? No, thank you for your car park. What do you mean, thank you for my car park? And then he told me that in his job, it was sometimes so stressful. He didn't know what to do. Builders on his back, come and approve it this way. Oh, come on, this will work. You don't have to follow all the rules. So much stress in his in his job. He would just get in his car and drive to Bodhinyana Monastery and park his car in the car park and just sit there. He never came in to talk to me. He never went in, even into the hall. He never got out of his car. He just parked his car and stayed there until he got enough of the peaceful energy of that place that his stress disappeared, and then he would drive back to work. He said, tomorrow is my last day. Today is my last day. Tomorrow I'm retiring. Before I retire, one of my things to do is just to say, come and thank you for your car park. And it wasn't the car park, it was a sense of the peaceful atmosphere there. And just going to a peaceful, calm place where you do feel safe, when people aren't trying to convert you, they're not trying to do anything, they're not shoving sort of a donation envelope in your face, where you just accept and respect, you can sit here however long you want, and you're given that peace and that freedom. It's such a beautiful gift. And that's one of the second parts of spirituality, peace. Giving people the opportunity to find peace, which is so rare in our world. A place of quiet and calm can be what was the other little anecdote comes to my mind? This one of the people here, they went over to Thailand because, you know, they thought maybe they can find some nice temples there and do some stuff there. And so they went into one of the temples in Bangkok. And as they were walked in the temple grounds, they saw this woman, maybe in her 20s or early 30s, and she was sitting on a bench, crying her eyes out, weeping and wailing. But because he was Australian Caucasian, he'd come here, he knew something about Buddhism, but he didn't know what was the protocol. And would it be okay if I sit next to her and put my arm around her? Well, maybe her husband might come afterwards, and who knows? But what should I do? What's the protocol? So, because he was a bit scared, but he wanted to help if he possibly could, so he decided not to. And he went into the temple, he did something in there, he never told me what it was, but about 20 minutes, 25 minutes afterwards, he came out of the big hall, and she was still sitting there, but she wasn't crying now. She was sitting there just pretty much peaceful. And so, he couldn't resist it by going, sitting next to her and saying, are you okay? And she understood enough English, and she said, yeah, I'm okay now. And when I went in, you were crying your eyes out. Is there anything I can do to help? No, it's okay now. He said, well, what happened? Were you beaten up? Or were you, you had some tragedy in your family? Did somebody die? You lose your job? She said, no, I didn't lose my job. I just lost my car keys. And for her, don't diminish a person. Sometimes, that's just the last straw. And she got so distraught. And all she needed was a little place she could go, just to chill out, to be left alone, just to reconcile what had happened. You know, to this day, a lot of times, that's all we really need, a peaceful place, a safe place, a kind place, just to sit down. We don't need to be told what to do. Sometimes that just makes us more stressed. We just need a place to literally unwind, be at peace, be respected, be sort of like embraced in our own calm space. So to me, that peace, and of course when you really get into deep meditation, that peace is just one of the most beautiful joys, the happiness of a peaceful mind. Just sitting here, not trying to prove anything, not trying to sort of be judged, achieve anything, just at peace. At peace means just learning how to rest, to be here. And just like that building surveyor, or like that woman who'd lost her car keys, all you needed to do is just be given the opportunity to be at peace. And all those problems eventually get put into perspective. They're not big problems. So the old simile of how big is my hand? My hand is so big, when I'm obsessed with the problem, it just stays right in front of my face and I can't see anything else but the problem, and it's huge. When you're peaceful, it just goes out to where it belongs, at the end of your arm. Yeah, the hand hasn't diminished inside, the problem is exactly the same, but now it's got perspective, it's not such a big deal anymore. You've found some peace in your life. And peace is not what people tell you or force you to do. Peace is what happens when you relax and let things be, when you have some kindness and space. And there you find the peace. One of those other little stories is, you know, these are just associations, methods which you find peace. It was when I, as a young man, I went to the United States in 1969. I never actually made it to Woodstock, but there was another festival close by. And just travelling around, hitchhiking all over the place. And, you know, after a while, sort of, the United States was pretty much the same as anywhere else in the world. Maybe a bit extreme this way, maybe not as kind in other ways, but people were always very friendly to me. But anyway, I thought, why not go to somewhere more interesting? So I went south of the border into the Central America, because I saw a book about the jungles and these ancient Mayan pyramids, which were supposed to be spiritual centers, but no one knew what they meant. So, you know, no, hardly any money, so I had to really just go on buses and fishing boats, and that was just a great adventure, going through real jungles. And to this day, you know, one of the best meals I ever had, okay, was the fishing boat stopped on this river between Belize and Guatemala, the dividing river. There's no fences or anything there. They were told that size is one country, the size of the other country. No one really bothered about borders in those days. And so they've stopped at this old bamboo and thatch restaurant. There's no roads anywhere. It's just the only transport was by river. And they had these tortillas, corn cakes and black beans and the strongest coffee and sweetest you could ever imagine. It was delicious. Such simple food. It's just the peasant food. I love that stuff. Still remember it to this day. It cost hardly anything, but it was just really basic Indian food. And really dirty. Dogs running all over the place. But, you know, I had a strong tummy in those days. But then, when I actually got to these pyramids in the middle of the jungle, no one was stopping you, no guides, there's no sort of, no tourists at all. It's just, the only person I saw there was this one archaeologist who was just doing something, and I just was left to all these pyramids by myself, and I was only 18, fit, young, strong, handsome, just like today, haven't changed much in all that. So, you know, what do? You climb one of the pyramids just to see what's at the top there. Not really knowing what you're doing. And it's a long way up. Really steep. So I got to the top and there was this little, almost like a hut at the top. And I didn't know what it was, but then when I got to the top, it was just so obvious. This is like spirituality. You know, don't let your learning stand in the way of truth. Because I didn't have much learning then, the truth was obvious. Because at the top of the pyramid, it was above the tree line. And the first time in weeks, I could see long distance. I could see the horizon in all directions. Nothing was between me and infinity. In all directions. And this incredible emptiness and space, which was embracing everything. And that was like peace. Sometimes we disturb peace by giving it a name, by trying to put it in a bottle and make it into a dogma and write it in a book and then fight like hell over who's got the right book. And spirituality is something else. It's feeding that peace. And that's what those pyramids were for. Just right at the top, see forever in all directions. So cool. So wonderful, but there's nothing there. Emptiness in all directions. Beautiful. And that's all you needed to do, just go up there and just chill out. And this is that peace I always think is an important part of spirituality. And sometimes we lose that peace. You know, when we sometimes try and market Buddhism or Christianity or whatever, we sometimes can't even hear that peace when we're arguing about who's right and who's wrong. But you always find that in the in the spaces between the words. Even just like in the spaces between people in this hall. Have you ever noticed this hall is mostly empty? When we just see the people and not the spaces. Then we always see girls, boys, bottles of water, Ajahn Brahm, Buddha statues, but imagine just seeing just what is around all of the things in this room. Far greater. There's always more space than there are things. But unfortunately, we've always been trained to perceive things, rather what's between things. And we always look at what's between, you know, the person, you and the person sitting next to you, as what separates you. And change perception. Well, the distance between you is not what separates you, it's that lovely, lovely emptiness which actually joins you together. Different perspective. That beautiful emptiness which embraces everybody. The peace. Don't look at the things, look at what's between the things. And so, this is actually how we learn just how to appreciate the peace. Rather than the things. Now, one of the things I was just saying here, any etymologist might challenge me on this, but I think there's something to this. That because I was over in Cambridge, and you know, one of the places where I used to hang out was, you know, the Cavendish Laboratory. They've moved it now, but that was just so wonderful there, because there you see where this fellow, was it P.J. Townsend? No. Oh, I'm getting confused with the guitarist of the Who, Townsend, or something like that. He found the electron. Anyway, but it's also where Rutherford, the Kiwi, split the atom. You've got the room there. Just so, P.G. Thompson, sorry. No, Pete Townsend was the guitarist of the Who. Because that was our local band when I was young. I lived just down the road. But anyway, this was the other fellow, Pete Thompson, who found the electron. But anyway, this particular person, he split the atom, because the atom was the Greek indivisible thing which things, substance, was made of. You know, like the essential substance of stuff. And he split it and found it wasn't essential. There was basically so much space there. And he found out the atom is not the permanent essence of stuff. And just like 26 centuries ago, the Buddha split the Atma. Not the atom, the Atma, the indivisible soul essence. He found there was nothing there. Just like Rutherford. And the word atom and Atma, you know, because, you know, the Greeks and the Sanskrit, Pali, the Indian Aryan languages, is there a connection there between atom and atma? Atom, an indivisible particle, according to the Greeks. Atma, the indivisible self. But anyway, that's another thing. But peace is something which is so easy to worship. And to find that does have meaning. And lastly, and the other thing which is like the wisdom, the kindness. Because that wisdom, you know, wisdom is not something you write books about or argue about who's right and who's wrong. That's what my teacher Ajahn Chah used to say. When he saw people arguing, he looked at one of those monks and said, "Yeah, you're right, but not correct." And looked at the other monk and said, "You're correct, but not right." It's a very beautiful little, not sort of preferring one person to another, but saying you're both wrong because you're arguing. So real wisdom is something which does settle arguments, calms people down, finds common ground, connections between people, things which everybody can agree upon and love and respect. Things like compassion and kindness. Things like truth. Deep truth. And even the Buddha used to say that you can know it's the truth, it's the Dharma teaching the Buddha, if it leads to peace, freedom, enlightenment. So I do recall years ago being invited to give the talk at the morning assembly at Christ Church Grammar School. And that was with one of my mates, that was the chaplain, Canon Frank Sheehan. And he became a nice mate of mine. And so there we were in front of, you know, Christ Church Grammar School, a really top school, Anglican Christian school here in Perth. And three of us were outside waiting for the kids to be settled down in this beautiful chapel with this amazing views over the Swan River. And as we were outside, the principal, you know, was a very devout Christian, and he said, "When we go, welcome to our school, when we go inside, you know, the chaplain, Frank and I, we will bow to the statue of Jesus Christ, because we're Christians." We said, "You're a Buddhist, you don't need to." You know, I'm a cheeky monk sometimes, as these two monks next to me will know, and sometimes I make an argument just to make a point. And so I said to the principal, I said, "No. I demand my right to bow to your statue of Jesus." I remember his face. What are you talking about? What mad monk have I let into my school? And then I explained to him, "Yeah, I'm not a Christian, I'm a Buddhist, but still I can see something, you know, in your image of Jesus Christ, something which I can find so worthwhile and wonderful, I will bow to that." And he got it straight away. By making a bow, you're not saying you're a Christian. You're actually saying there's something there you can respect and find value in. So I did that. You know, the result of that was 2 weeks later, kids from that school came on a trip to Bodhinyana Monastery, about 60 of them, you know, to see the place together with the principal. I should have had this photographed, but anyway, we went into the main hall in Bodhinyana Monastery, and together the principal and I bowed 3 times in front of the Buddha statue. He saw something in value there. Now you can see that is spirituality. Something which everyone can respect. We find peace, we can find some common ground, some respect, something which is real spirituality. Not religions which divide, but paths of peace. Something really deeper. Something which, you know, the Buddha was pointing to. Not to create problems in our world, but to solve problems. That's one of the reasons why when religion is presented as "I am better than you," or that, you know, that "I've got to destroy you because you're standing in my way," there's something which people reject in our modern world. Spirituality, they can see something deeper and what they can feel it. And it makes sense to them. And it fulfills their hopes of a peaceful world where there can be harmony. They can have less of this stress and fear in our world. That people can live in harmony, respecting people, even with disabilities. I don't find it hard to get that word out of my mouth anymore. Disabilities. What are you talking about? Disabilities. Some of those Down syndrome friends, wow, I looked up to them. They were wiser than me in so many areas. And you know, I preferred their company, honestly, to some of the professors at Cambridge University. Yeah, they may have had a Nobel Prize, but they were stupid in life. And those, some of those Down syndromes, they were just so warm and so sensitive and so nice to be around. So anyway, this is actually where we find meaning in life. And so that's when we bow to the Buddha. I bow for peace, sorry, for virtue, peace and compassion, usually, because that's what inspires me. That's why you're a Buddhist monk. And you know, it's not that I ever reject those great teachings of the Buddha or the great teachings of my master Ajahn Chah. They just enhance just what you feel inside your heart. Ethics, trust, goodness, forgiveness, It's so wonderful. Inclusion, love. Very happy with the results of the same-sex marriage. I've already done my first same-sex marriage blessing when I was actually in UK. It was illegal there, so I did my blessing. So I'm still waiting for the one here, the first one when it gets passed. Yeah, you look at some of the fears, but you look at the feelings in the heart. Come on. That's where truth lies. And that's where kindness is. So if I can bow, you know, together with a prominent Christian, same-sex marriage, why do you have to have even same religion marriage? Yeah, you can have a Muslim and a Christian get married. Why a Buddhist? Why not? So what we're doing here is actually we're taking spirituality to a deeper level. And if spirituality is the last, if it is actually to have meaning for people, sometimes that religious leaders have lost the plot. And sometimes it's not respected. Some of their attitudes, some of their frustrations of what ordinary people know is peace and love and kindness and freedom and deep stillness. Sometimes if I can go to that stillness and peace, there one can find just a path forward. So yeah, there's been lots of criticism of religions, rejection of religions. Even in the UK, there'll be more people now who have no faith at all, no religion at all, no allegiance, than there are people with religions. And so people are abandoning that because the religions are not relating. It's too stuck in sort of what they've been taught, rather than looking at what they've been taught as a way to find out a truth. Stuck on the path rather than following that path. Being nominal Buddhists, Christians, Muslims, instead of feeling what that really means. And having the trust and the courage to follow the heart rather than the dogma. Never let the dogma stand in the way of the truth. Okay, there we go. So anyway, that's a little off the cuff, little talk. So any comments or questions? Okay, there's sure to be some from overseas. Let's see, the great oceans which join us. Okay, here we go, the first question here, oops, go away. From Melbourne, how do you lower your expectation when the whole world tells you to do the opposite, such as striving or chasing for a goal? You listen to talks like from Dhammaloka, you get retrained. The whole world tells you to do all sorts of stupid things, but how about following your heart? Or associating with good people, with kind people? And then if you associate with kind people, wise people, you don't get into so much problems. I know that somebody told me that I think Australia is playing cricket today with England. So lower your expectations. Who's supposed to win? Who's supposed to lose? Doesn't matter. You win today, you lose tomorrow. Who's the better team? It doesn't really matter, does it? It's great because I've got dual nationality. I can never stand for Parliament, but it means I don't have to suffer in the cricket. I just find out who's winning. And then if it's England are winning, I don't know the latest scores. If England win, I get my British passport out. I'm a pom today. And if the Australians start winning, I get my Australian passport on. Good on you. So why do people just associate with stuff which creates suffering? You can't always win. From Australia, if I lower my expectation, how can I achieve my goals? It's okay, I hope you're watching here because this is the visual explanation of this. And this was a lady here who told me this, you know, when I was sitting here. She said, I'm really suffering. This is my goal. This is where I know I should be in life, in my earning potential, my assets, and all my achievements. I know I should be up here, but I'm down here somewhere. It's just so hard, so much stress and suffering, trying to work hard to get up to where I know I should be in life. And I said, look, that's not how you get peace in life. If this is where you think you should be, and this is where you are, how about lowering where you think you should be to where you are? Then you're at peace. She got it. The problem was we have unrealistic expectations of ourselves. Just like your kids. Year 12 exams, university entrance exams are coming up soon. So, I remember this little poem which I wrote, I copied in my first book. It's from Sung Po, the Chinese poet. It was about 600, 700 years ago now, at least. And he said, on the birth of my son. It was his poem on the birth of his son. And it goes something like this. Parents, when a child is born, want it to grow up to be intelligent. I, said Sung Po, through intelligence, having wrecked my own life, only wish my child turns out to be stupid. Then he will live a very tranquil life, crowned by being appointed as a cabinet minister in the government later on. So what do you want to be intelligent for? Isn't it better to be kind? If you have a child, what do you want your child to turn out to be? Intelligent or kind and virtuous and peaceful? What would you like it to be? I know if I had a child, intelligence, getting degrees, you pass one exam, you have to pass another exam. You get quite conceited, being an expert. So anyway, lower your expectations. You can have a nice, peaceful life. How can I be kind when I'm depressed and in a sad, upset mood? Okay, one of the reasons you get to be depressed and sad and upset is because you've been trying to achieve too many goals in your life. And you haven't reached it and you think, oh my goodness, I'm a failure. Because everybody else is happy, but not me. And that is so depressing. So if you can, just first of all, you know it will pass after a while. Depression, sad, upset, never last. Eventually they disappear. So there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But also, sometimes depressed, sad, upset is because you're exhausted, mentally exhausted. So rest. And don't sort of fight that depression, that sadness, that upset. Be sick in their life. So why do we always stigmatize sickness and say to our doctors, doctor, there's something wrong with me. I've got a cold. I've got the flu. There's nothing wrong with being sick. There'll be something terribly wrong if you never get sick. You'll be weird. You'll be the subject of so many experiments, you know, in the Queen Elizabeth Medical Center. Find out what's wrong with you. You never get sick. So when you say it's right to be sick, you don't stigmatize it. Then you find it's the other times the sickness is not so intense. It's eased off because you're not reacting to it with denial. There's something wrong with me. I'm a failure. Same with being depressed or being upset. You think, oh, there's something wrong with me. I'm a monk. I shouldn't be upset. I shouldn't be in a bad mood. So, even monks, sometimes you get up on the wrong side of the mat in the morning. Don't have a bed. But you know, I'm happy to be upset. I'm happy to tell really bad jokes. Which is a segue to the latest bad joke. Here it comes. Monks, you can put your fingers in your ears because you've heard it so many times already. What do you call a can opener which doesn't work? A can opener which doesn't work. A can't opener. The best part of that joke is the expression on some of your faces. So anyway, just, you should get depressed by now with terrible jokes like that, or sad and upset, but I'm happy to be, all the moods of my life. Sometimes tired, sometimes sick. You accept them, you embrace them, it's part of life. That's how you're kind. You open the door of your heart to life. Open the door of your heart to disappointment. It's part of life. Open the door of your heart to not getting what you want. I was sad that I went all that way, just a long way, to have a debate with Russell Brand, and he never showed up. I didn't get depressed. I'm not sad, upset. Just, that's life. Happens. So what? She'd be right, mate. So this is actually how you can be kind. So don't fight too much. Don't fight battles which you can never win. Don't expect from life what it can never give you. You'll have your depressed times. They pass. There's nothing wrong with that. Be kind. Okay. Very good. So, now we do the utter bow a few times to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can actually go. Because I have to rush off back to Jhana Grove, so any questions or complaints, I will leave to my two great assistants.
Pass in the back. Great, well, you've got it.
Arahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṁ bhagavantaṁ abhivādemi suvākkhato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṁ namassāmi Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṁ Namāmi.